excited about podcast series. Joining me in the engine room today is a highly talented young musician. He started playing drums in a band with his brother when he was only 10 years old. The band quickly earned the reputation as a must-see live act, opening for some of Adelaide's premier bands along the way. He has since played with several other bands and, despite working part-time and studying at university, has made time to come and chat with me today. It is my immense pleasure to welcome Dylan DiPaolo.
Hello.
Welcome, Dylan, and thank you for being available to chat with me today.
Of course, thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure, Dylan. Let's start from the beginning. Where were you born?
Adelaide, Australia.
Okay. Now, I know that your brother is a guitarist. Does anyone else in the family have a musical background?
Well, my dad used to play guitar and he's a big music fan. So that's probably where we got like most of our like inspirations from of what music to listen to. Cause he also likes metal.
Right.
So it's kind of his fault, eh?
All right. Oh, well, that's good. What led to, or who influenced you to start playing drums?
Probably Tyler, because he started learning guitar probably like a year or two before I picked up an instrument. So like, mm-hmm. I wanted to learn guitar, but like, obviously he already did it. So I was like, maybe I should do something that I can actually play with him. So ended up doing drums.
Alrighty. So when did you get your first set of drums?
So when I was like probably 7, I got like a drum pad first. I think they gave it like just as like to see if I was actually like committed to doing it.
Fair enough.
Then probably when I was 8, I got my first drum kit, like my first actual drum kit.
All right. So you would have been in primary school. So was there music being taught at school or did you have lessons privately?
I had lessons privately. My school wasn't like overly musical, like for primary anyway, but most of the music that I did was outside of school.
Right. Okay. Now, I know that you attended Marriottville High School, which has a multifaceted music curriculum special interest music program.
Yeah. That was, like, why me and Tyler both went there, because of all the music and stuff. Figured it was, like, a good way to, like, sort of broaden our horizons, because we weren't doing music at any school or anything like that.
Right. In 2012, you and your brother Tyler, so he was 11 and you were 10 at the time, you met Christy, who was then age 13, and by December of that year, Sweet Anarchy was born.
Pretty much, yeah. Because we all met through, like, it was like a program, I think it was called Weekend Warriors, and a bunch of young people all rocked up and then they sorted everyone in bands.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't in a band with her, but we ended up like talking afterwards, and we just started jamming.
Excellent. And you got to play in quite a lot of big venues fairly early in your band's career, didn't you?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting being like such a small kid in like such a big scene as well. Everyone was so much older than me in particular, because like with Christy and Tyler, she was probably 2 years older than him. And Tyler's 2 years older than me, so the age gap was, like, you know, really, like, big, especially for me being probably 10 and 11 around the time of the bigger shows.
And you were opening for some of Adelaide's premier bands, such as Matterhorn and Whiskey Harbour and Machine Head.
Yeah, I mean, the drummer for Whiskey Harbour was actually my drum teacher.
Okay, well, that's great. And on a number of occasions, I believe that you were supported by your mentor, the great Aussie legend Swanee.
Oh, yeah. We had like a good few like shows with him because he helped us out, and we'd always like a few times we went over to his and he'd give us some tips. And yeah, that was a good like relationship we had with him.
Yeah. I recently interviewed him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he spoke about the different things that he was doing back then in Adelaide and mentoring and everything, which was fabulous.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he is. In 2015, you won the 13th annual Battle of the Bands held in Murray Bridge. What was that like?
That was great, actually, because the best part about the Battle of the Bands is the recording money that you win. And that I think a lot of that went into like our first, like, I don't know if it was our first single or our first EP that we did. And that was a big start for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'd never been in like a big studio or anything before.
Yeah. No, that's fabulous, isn't it? Do you remember your first major gig?
I don't know. It's hard to say because like in my head back then, I'd go into any venue and I just like, oh, whoa, big venue, lights, big stage, scary. I think like the biggest one for me that like that I remember like standing out as very big was the Big Day Out Festival in 2014.
Mm.
That one was like the because that was like proper show type thing, and plus we got like backstage passes so we could meet the bands and stuff, whoever was on the festival. So I got to go back and meet Primus, and I met Ghost, but that was a very brief one.
Yeah. Was that the one that was held at Beniphen Park?
Yep. That was, I think it was like the last one.
And it was. It was the last big day out. They had Pearl Jam were the headliner.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I was there.
Oh.
Yeah. I really miss the big day out.
Yeah.
It was my favourite festival. It was such a great festival.
It really was, yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they decided to start introducing all these other festivals and ridiculously having them all around similar times of the year. And nobody can afford to go to a festival after festival after festival. They should have really spaced it out a bit.
Yeah, know? I remember like shortly after that festival, I didn't play this one, but I just went to Soundwave. I think it was like the year or so after.
Yeah.
But I was so young that like I didn't really, like cause it was just so hot outside that I just kind of wanted to leave the whole time. We were just talking about it, me and like Tyler and the bass player from our other band, Signals. We looked back on the lineup and it's actually amazing. Can't believe I actually didn't notice how good the lineup was. And I kind of wish I could go back and like watch all the bands I wanted to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, some of those festivals had amazing lineups. I know with the Big Day Out, everybody around the world was basically, you know, putting their hands up to try and get in on the bill because it was just such a good festival.
Yeah, and it's a weird, like, it almost feels like a foreign concept now that, like, big bands from overseas, you know, coming over and playing. Since COVID's kind of wiped it all out, like, it doesn't feel familiar at all anymore. Mm.
No, it's such a distant memory, isn't it? Oh, well, hopefully it won't be too soon before that all returns again.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do you have a memorable gig story that you'd like to share?
Mm. With Signals, my current band, we don't really have memorable stories, just kind of funny ones, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, like, that's fine, yeah.
We're
yeah.
also a very awkward band of dudes, so, like, whenever we end up going to a gig and talking to someone, we'll end up walking away being like, oh, we just completely ruined that conversation.
Do you think that's because of your age?
Oh, yeah. It's also, like, I think it's also because we're such a, like, a awkward bunch of people. Say, like, our guitarist in particular, he's normally the guy who, when he sees a band, he'll end up finding the guitarist and they'll talk gear for hours.
That's a guitarist thing, I think.
It is. It really is. But when we, like, go into, like, a new group of people and are at a gig and we're setting up and someone makes small talk, we always end up just, like, accidentally just slipping up and tanking the conversation. In terms of, like, that sort of thing, the biggest memory that's kind of ruined us over the past few months is probably our first ever gig at Enigma Bar. We were on stage and we were setting up and Kaelin was nervous, our singer, sorry, and he was stretching. And Tyler just looked over at him and for some reason just went, dude, you have cringe legs. That's been like a private joke we have from now on about his legs just being cringe.
Mm.
And somehow it's become like a whole thing. There's like a meme page or two about it, about just Caleb's legs being weird. It's accidentally caught on to become this weird thing.
Okay.
The worst things I've done is like forgotten gear and had to, oh, actually, no, the other, we had our EP launch the other week at Adelaide Uni Bar, and our guitarist didn't bring one of his guitars because there's a specific guitar is tuned differently or something like that. And he didn't yep. realize that he didn't bring it until we were going on stage. We were setting up and then he pulls me aside and he's like, all right, Dylan, I'm going to tell you something. Not a big deal. I don't have the guitar. And I was like, what? So what's the plan? So he ended up sorting something out. I can't remember like what his actual solution was. By some miracle, he pulled through. But oh my God, I was so mad at him.
Wow. Yeah, you got to make sure that you bring all your gear for your songs, right? It'd be like you turning up and not having your snare or something.
The funny part was he tried to blame me for it. He was like, oh, well, you were supposed to organize it all before you left. And I was like, I wasn't even home before the gig.
So this is a sibling thing, right?
Yeah, it's always kind of a sibling thing because, like,
yeah,
we've also been in bands for so long, so the whole brother thing just kind of naturally goes with the music.
Yeah. All of the bands that you've been in have been in together, haven't you?
There's been one band. I mean, there's been another band that I was in where it was just my schoolmates. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So what was that band?
That one was Sasha. That one's from all my friends from Marrickville. Bass player from that band is also in Signals.
Okay, so there's still a crossover somewhere. It's just not your brother.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Is there a band that you wish that you could play with?
There's a million bands I wish I could play with. Let me think. Definitely want to soon. Actually, we will soon. We're going to be playing with Starve at Parish Fest. That one we're all psyched for because we all love Starve. Oh, Vane yeah. FM. They're like probably the top of the list for me anyways.
Oh, well, hopefully once everything, you know, is opening up properly, you'll get the opportunity to do a lot more of that sort of thing, you know, with some of the bigger bands.
Yeah, hopefully, like, once, like, overseas travelling becomes a bit more normal again, more of the bands start coming through.
Mm.
That's what I'm very psyched for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everyone is. Okay, Dylan, how do you prepare yourself before a show?
Just rehearse, a lot of rehearsals. Especially with Signals, we're all pretty, like, good with having our material learnt beforehand. Especially if we're doing a cover, we're all very, very quick to learn. So when we go into a rehearsal, it's very, very nitpicky and just making sure everything's kind of sounding sick.
Yeah.
So when our shows come around and it's a kind of big one, we'll normally do a couple rehearsals a week for it just to make sure we're 100% mm-hmm. confident.
And what about on the day?
Oh, I'm really bad with being prepared and stuff for the day. Normally when it's during a day, I'm like rushing to get everything in time and then just praying that I don't forget anything.
Yeah.
I used to be big on warming up beforehand, but I've just been so lazy lately that I just haven't had the drive to do so, especially with vocal warm-ups, because I do vocals in the band as well.
Yeah.
So, like, normally I'd try and get some warm-ups in, but it just hasn't been happening lately.
Mm, yeah, well, that's something that's actually quite important.
Yeah, I know.
Ask a vocalist that has ended up with nodules and they'll tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you might want to think about that one, Dylan.
Yeah. It used to be a very big thing for me because I'd normally do, like, big warm-ups, like, before I even left to go to the venue, and then I'd do one in the venue, but now I'm, like, just doing something before the set just to make sure I'm not, like, doing anything badly. Luckily, like, I'm pretty, like, big on making sure my technique is safe, so as long as I'm just kind of warmed up and had enough water, I won't have, like, big issues, but yeah.
Mm, yeah, true. Yeah. Having had enough water during the day is a really important part of it, that's for sure. And especially with the type of vocals with the music that you play.
I mean, doing, like, those sort of vocals and everything, like, I just fall into the habit of drinking a lot of water. So, like, during the day, I kind of just naturally do that anyway.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good. So how has the pandemic impacted you as an artist?
It's hard to say. I mean, with Signals, we started during the pandemic. 2020, that was when we started, like, really cracking down on getting the band going. We had, I remember there was a show at the Gov with Polaris, Alpha Wolf, Crystal Lake, and all that. And that was, like, a big show for us where we were like, oh, no, we want to do this band. Let's definitely do it. And then COVID hit and, like, everything shut. So, like, that was when we started getting really into writing our own stuff and just really focusing on it all. And then we recorded and released in September. So things were still really slow at that time. It was all like seated shows and everything.
Yeah. I guess in a way, having things shut down meant that gave you the time to be able to spend on writing.
And I think that like whole time period was like a bit of a test to see, you know, like, Because a lot of people, like, we all had that free time. I guess it kind of depended what you did with it. It would have been very, very easy for us to not do anything. Our plan was to sort of wait till we could start doing shows. But then it took so long, we were like, let's work on releasing something. Let's just get something out.
Yeah, I think that's the better way to go about it. There's no point sitting around and waiting, complaining about the fact that you can't play. Why not look at writing and recording like you did? You know, making good use of that time so that when you can play again, you've got something new to play.
With the shows, they definitely helped our writing quite a bit as well. So once that started, like, the show started coming back. With our songs, we kind of wanted to test them on, like, an audience, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Just to see how everyone feels about it. So the first two singles, we didn't have that opportunity, so we just kind of had to, like, assume it would work. But with the next, like, lot of songs that we've done, we've kind of been able to, like, see how an audience would, like, take to certain bits and see if any parts were just, like, a bit of dead time. And we really got to trim the fat on the songs.
Yeah. Well, that's good. How did it impact your other bands?
I'm into, like, a few side projects as well. Over the last, like, year, I've kind of gone around and done some things, like, with other artists. I've joined new bands as well. Probably, like, in the start of this year or, like, the end of last year, I joined this band Days of Deceit. Through COVID, I think we just started. I started talking to those guys. Ended up traveling to Sydney to record new music with them. Luckily, no COVID problems there. I got to meet some new people. I got to meet Stevie Knight, our producer, who's a bloody legend. Mm-hmm. With other bands, it's kind of become more of a test, if anything, I'd say. In that sense, it's more on you than anyone else, because if you were a band before 2020, opportunities would sort of like kind of happen. Like a band would be doing a gig and you could message them to jump on the lineup, or someone needed someone for something, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now you kind of have to drive yourself.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely good. Just got to make sure you're not, you don't slip up, because, I mean, school didn't stop for us. It would have been very easy for me to, like, start focusing more on all my schoolwork done. I didn't.
No.
But I ended up, you know, graduating, but that was a challenge.
But you graduated. Congratulations.
Thanks. Made it out there.
You made it out. Well, that's a good thing. And now you're able to play.
Yeah.
Dylan, if you could offer only one tip to a brand new drummer, what would it be?
Commit to what you're playing, if that makes any sense. Like, that's the biggest one for me, especially when I'm like, I see some drummers that are less confident because they're newer and they sort of like hesitate their drum parts.
Mm.
And I always say, like, you're playing it well. I just wish you would just like really just commit to it. Like, just put all your conviction into that drum part. Make it feel like you really, really know it.
Excellent. Who are your top three local drummers?
Okay, first one, I'd say just got to give it off to Eli Green, because he's like, to me, he's like the epitome of a hardcore drummer. He's just got that, such that good energy. And every time I watch, and he's one of those drummers that, like, as I was saying, commits to the drum part. Like, you can tell he's, like, comfortable in his drum part. He's just kind of going off with it. And that's, yeah, that's the most enjoyable type of drummer for me to watch. Another one who's like that is Matt Adams. He's a drummer locally. He's in a band called The Munch. When I watch him play, he's just like, he's just got so much energy and drive with his playing. He hits so hard as well. It's so, like, enjoyable for me to go to, like, a show and see those type of drummers. So every time I see him play, I just get so amped up. And third one, probably Mitchell Seeger. He's the drummer from the band Lola. Because we work with the same producer, Jared Nettle, and, like, talking to him about Mitchell, it makes so much sense why, like, we all like his drumming so much. He's just so consistent on the ball all the time. It's really, really, like, it's such a, he's lovely of a player.
Excellent. Dylan, I want you to choose the three most important to you from the following five.
Okay.
So we've got groove, creativity, chops, technique, and time. Out of those five, which three are most important to you?
Groove, creativity, and time.
Okay.
I think chops kind of come with creativity in its own sense. Like, chops, like, I mean, if you're learning chops to play chops, it's just going to be boring. Kind of would rather someone have their own voice in something less technical. It's got to be in time, obviously. I'm not a big fan of, like, someone who just kind of learns a lot of notes to have a lot of notes played. Because eventually then that just kind of becomes, oh, you're going to do a fast thing now. Cool. I'd rather just hear someone just really have their own voice.
Dylan, if you could invite any musicians to play with you in a concert anywhere in the world, you're on the kit, who would you call? Where would it be held? And what genre would the band be performing?
Ooh. Do I have to, like, make a band formation?
You make up your own band, yeah.
Oh, no. This is going to be a weird mesh.
That's good.
I mean, it'd probably end up being some sort of heavier band.
Mm.
So, like, I think for vocals, because if I was going to make, like, a big supergroup, I'd probably want to do something kind of weird. There's a vocalist who, he's actually my vocal coach, but, like, he's probably, like, one of my favorite vocalists at the minute. His name is Justin. He's in a band called Teller.
Mm.
I'd probably get him on vocals because he's got such a weird style that I think if I was to make a supergroup, I'd want something really unique like that.
Yeah.
Bass and guitar-wise, that's really hard for me to choose because I'm kind of cozy with Signals backing with Tyler and Kynan because that's just kind of what I know.
Yeah.
I'd want to do some kind of, like, weird location, like some kind of skate park or something like that gig. Something very left of center. I think it'd have to be somewhere like where people are free to go as mental as they want to. rather than just a big venue with like big scary security guards at the front of the stage.
Excellent. Dylan, is there something that you've really tried to play that you couldn't get right or you weren't satisfied with the way that you played it?
Anything like with, like, the really fast double kicks. That's my big, like, thing I've struggled to get. Things involving big chops and, like, stuff. I can kind of eventually work my way around and, like, kind of make sense of it. But when it's, like, those big, like, double kicks, that's when I start to, like, lose muscles in my legs. When I was, like, probably, like, 17 and 16, that sort of age, I got really into, like, a lot of progressive music and stuff that kind of built in a lot of like good ear training for me to like kind of learn things quickly. Most things where it's like just kind of a bit hard meter wise and hand wise, I'm normally fine.
So how do you correct that? How do you get better at that?
Spend hours and hours practicing really. That's like the only way you can really get it. I'm sort of comfortable with what I can do for my own stuff at the minute, but back a few years ago, I was really not happy with it. I would probably spend at least like 5 or 6 hours a day, if I had those hours anyway. I would just go to like a metronome and just kind of keep going and keep going. Try a song, see if I can do it. I can't do it, back to the metronome.
Do you ever get bored with your own playing?
Oh yeah, all the time. Me and Tyler have the same sort of problem where like if I'm hearing something and it's me playing, it kind of grates me to listen to. Because it's like, oh, I would do that fill, wouldn't I? And it becomes a bit hard to listen to. But every now and then I'll probably do something like that to make sure that I'm not doing the same stuff. Even if you get like a lot of chops and a lot of things there, you always end up falling into like the same habits.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing that I'm always kind of worry and look out for. When you're doing like heavy stuff, normally there's like some standard stuff you're going to do anyway. So it's just making sure you're putting your own thing around that style anyway.
Now, you said before that you're involved in a lot of side projects and things. So how many bands and projects are you currently involved in on a regular basis?
There's some things that are kind of on and off. So, like, especially because of COVID, because, like, there's some where I'm actually just, like, travelling over to sort of get together with a group. But at the moment, it's, like, on and off, like, 6 or 7.
Well, that's quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very hard to keep track of everything, I'll be honest, especially when, like, say, like, a busy week comes up with work or uni or something like that. I'll get, like, messages about organizing something, and I'm like, oh, there's no way I'll be able to do it anytime soon, sorry.
Yeah, makes it hard. So what are you studying at uni at the moment, Dylan?
Oh, I'm just doing a Bachelor of Music degree. Second year as of now, because I've finished for the year. Songwriting-based course.
Okay, well, that's good. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's fun. Meeting a lot of new people through it as well. People that I probably wouldn't have met otherwise.
Yeah. That's good, because it's broadening your network of musicians.
That's a very important thing as well. That's kind of the reason we went to Marrickville as well, because eventually you meet some people that are not like your usual type of musician. Because if you eventually end up working with the same musicians, you're going to find yourself doing the same things. I'd like to think that like over time I've kind of become a bit easier at putting on different hats for different groups and different sounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's great. It's good to be versatile.
Yeah.
Excellent. And you mentioned that you're working as well. What are you doing for a job?
I'm a tradie. I'm doing like night work. So like it's cool. I think the term is shop fitting.
Yeah.
So I'll go into whatever shop they send me to and build the shelves, set up everything for the place. They normally like shut for a few days or so.
Yeah.
It's really like good work and I love the company, but like the hours, they kill me. Because I'm like, I'm working from like 9 p.m. till 6 a.m. these next few nights as well.
Yeah.
So like half the time I'll like work and then I won't have any energy to do anything else. But like half the time there's a million things I should be doing.
Yeah. So how do you work that around gigging?
Oh, I mean, luckily with like the work I do, I can kind of choose which shifts I end up on because I'm a casual worker as well. If I know I can't do certain days, I'll just call them up and say, hi, can't do that. But, like, it's normally pretty, like, relaxed.
So you've got a bit of flexibility there. Well, that's good because with studying as well, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It must get quite hectic for you.
Kind of mentally draining, which is probably the biggest issue for me because, like, I'll work. And like, you're working with a lot of people, so you got to be switched on and not screw up because everyone's kind of counting on everyone for certain things. Finish up the work, I'm kind of brain dead. Just like, oh, no one asked me for anything anymore, please.
Yeah. Mentally taxing. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
I don't know if, like, the band stuff is going to end up working or anything, but I'm hoping to find a career path in something related to, you know, music or drumming. Because I'm also a teacher. I do teach drums.
Is that privately or is that through somewhere else?
So that's through Army. I was kind of thinking that could also be an avenue somewhere to go into. So just trying out a lot of different things, hoping to sort of find my area in music that I could probably live off of. That's the main goal, I'd say. Not so much like anything taking off or anything, just finding something that I can do.
Yeah, that you're happy doing, yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, that's the object of it all, isn't it? Finding something that you're happy to do for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you hope to have achieved before you do lay down the sticks for the last time? It's a long way off, I know.
Yeah. It's hard to say. With a lot of my things that I'm doing, my center of my attention is not really on the drums, if that makes sense. It's kind of centered around the whole band and group and song. Because I spent so many years just kind of sweating over every drum thing. A lot of it just kind of falls naturally for me. When I'm doing signals, I'm just worrying about the whole package, just where everything is just kind of going well. When I'm doing a signal show, I'm not thinking about how the drums go necessarily. I'm thinking about how the show goes. The main thing I'd like to achieve is probably just to give some people some new ways of looking at drums. I think especially with heavy music, a good thing that doesn't get used as much are tones and colours on the drums.
Excellent.
Thank you.
we end our chat today, I'm going to ask Dylan 20 quick random questions, or as many as we can get through in the space of 2 minutes to close the interview. Are you ready, Dylan?
I'm ready. I think.
Your time starts now. What was the first song you learnt to play?
Boys Are Back in Town by Thin Lizzy.
When did metalcore become one of the most popular heavy metal subgenres?
Ooh. Depends what you mean by metalcore. There's different, like, ways of describing it, but I don't know. It became bigger in the last, like, 10 years, last
yep.
decade, for
yep,
me anyway.
Correct. What was the first album that you purchased?
Fear of the Dark by Iron Maiden.
What does metalcore stand for?
It's a combination of metal and hardcore.
Correct.
Right?
Name a band you wish you'd seen play live.
Dillinger Escape Plan, because they were at Soundwave and I missed them.
Who is your favourite international drummer?
Jimmy the Rev Sullivan.
The most sticks that you've dropped during a gig?
Probably two, but I've broken like three pairs at a show before.
What was the hardest jazz song that you learnt to play?
There's a few big band pieces I learnt at Marrickville that kind of fucked me up.
Okay.
I can't remember the names of
all
them.
All right,
there.
Fair enough. What was the first concert that you went to?
Might have been Metallica.
Name a famous drummer that you'd like to meet.
Ian Pace.
What's your favourite TV show?
Ooh, Peep Show.
Your favourite venue to play at?
Might have to say either Jive or Unibar have been fun.
Who taught you how to drive?
Dad.
Name a music genre that you don't like.
Country. Country pop.
Okay, we're out of time. All right, you didn't do too bad. You got through 14, so well done, Dylan. Thank you once again.
I'll take it.
Thank you once again, Dylan, for joining me for the Bandit About podcast today. You've been great to chat to, and I hope that everyone who listens finds this as enjoyable as I did.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really fun to do this.
Well, I'm glad that you're able to find the time to fit me in today. That was great. Thank you.
Of course.
All information and links relating to today's interview can be located in the show notes. And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please share the link with your friends. Until next week, it's goodbye from me, Di, Bandit About, proudly supporting live music. Bye.
Bye. Drive, I swear.
Notifications, this is your new day. Mice.